Listen, Canacon Day 2 is drawing to a close, and I just got, I hope I don't geek out too much, I just got the coolest opportunity that I've had at this thing. When you go to these shows, certain people stride these floors like true rock stars, and I'm with one of them. One half of the Pot Brothers at Law, my guest at this time on The Infused Show, Mark Wasserman. Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's such an honor, my man. I'm a big fan, as I told Mark before, of the work that he and his brother do and their mission to kind of help serve this community. But, Mark, we're in Oklahoma City, and I heard you talking the other day. You were out here doing some filming.
Yes, I was. I'm an actor. That, you know, it's interesting because when me and my brother first came on and infiltrated a social media, not having any idea what was about to happen, people thought, are you an actor or are you guys really brothers? And, you know, we had to look, we're really brothers. We really smoke pot and we're both really attorneys. You know, here's my bar number. You know, you can look it up. And I did not advertise or talk about the fact that I am, as I believe, first and foremost, an actor. Uh-huh. I grew up loving that craft, and I started at a very young age and went through college and musical theater and all that stuff. And for me, that, you know, that's something where when I tell people, I have an IMDb page, you know, the Internet Movie Database, you know, go,
right,
you go put my name in, and, you know, because I get questioned more and more. And recently, I hadn't had a real acting gig in a real deep one like this in probably 10 or 15 years.
Really?
When I did something, it was an independent film called Falling Down, different from the Michael Douglas. interesting, I got it. We named it Falling Down because my friend said, I want your Falling Down movie, which I also wrote with my buddy, on the shelves at Blockbuster, for those who remember Blockbuster.
Dude, I remember. Yeah, yeah.
And it'll be right next to Michael Douglas's Falling Down, because I get it a lot. I get that, hey, you look like Michael Douglas, you know, and I've got that over the years and stuff, but just as a funny aside. But for that movie, I had to gain 50 pounds.
What?
And
wow.
I had to gain and lose it for that. And it's on Amazon. You can check it out.
Check it out, definitely.
Not the Michael Douglas movie. but this movie then came along through the same friend I made the other one with, who's producing films out here. You know, he moved back out here to Oklahoma, which is becoming a kind of a little Hollywood. A boom is happening with production out here. And he said one day, check your email, read this script, short film.
Okay.
And he hadn't sent me something in quite some time, so I was very intrigued.
Yeah.
I read it, and it is about a vet, homeless vet, 60 years old or so, was in Desert Storm, and in Oklahoma City, roaming around. There's, you know, homeless problems everywhere,
sure,
including here. And he finds himself beat up and in a dumpster where, you know, he may be about to end his life, and he sees a plant that's pretty much at the end of its rope. And he finds some sort of connection, takes the plant out of the garbage, gets into the soil. It's a cannabis plant, he realizes, and names it Herbie. And so it's the story of this homeless vet who cares for and curates Herbie, as through a montage sequence, he's getting bigger and bigger until, you know, it's a beautiful, it's, you know, like, there you go. You know, that's a bunch of Herbies right there I'm looking at in an incubator that, you know, when they grow. And he then gets beat up and they steal Herbie because it's worth a lot of money. And he ultimately finds these people, and he was a former Special Forces Ranger, so he kicks their ass.
Nice.
But Herbie's gone, because they, you know, they ripped him apart and sold him. But a bunch of seeds were the remains. And he ends up with an ocean of Herbies. And so in its basic form, homeless vets, homelessness is a problem.
Yes, it is.
Homeless vets, I mean, that's just...
It's a crime.
Exactly. And then you have the crime on top of that crime of forcing vets to take opiates and all the other garbage and not giving them the free and total access to cannabis. So you have here a guy, a homeless vet, who's at the end of his rope. He finds a cannabis plant. He saves the cannabis plant. The cannabis then saves him. And, you know, when I had the opportunity to jump into that role, I said yes. I had spent 3 months growing my hair and my beard and my nails and, you know, all that stuff that actors do, or at least that I do, you know.
It's commitment.
And we came out here a week ago Tuesday. So I was here for a good 5 days shooting before I came to CannaCon. And we shot in and around all of Oklahoma City. There were some great moments where they had a drone flying all around, and that was it. And all the cameras everywhere else were out. And I just was roaming around and getting real interaction. And a lot of people don't look at homeless people. They'll look away.
Sure.
You know, and a lot of homeless people won't look at you.
Right.
You know, they won't look. And there were times when I was maybe sitting somewhere, I had a change bucket, and somebody, you know, walked by and dropped something in it. In fact, he said, "Better days, mate." I think it was Australian or something like that.
Okay.
Ended up being $4. And family walked by, a little girl, "Mommy, can I?" And clink, a 50-cent piece was in the, you know. And so,
wow.
And I gave that away, of course, to homeless people that I saw. But the compassion that exists, something like that.
Yeah.
Because people might think, well, you know, only two people, you know. And it's not the physical act, I don't think. But
no.
For every person that does that, there are a bunch of people that are walking by that might think, maybe I should do that. And by the time they're processing it, they're already walked by.
Well, look, I mean, you're influencing hearts and minds. I mean, that's the big work. And so your friend was obviously right when he sent you that script. There was something engaging, beautiful story there. And as the son of a vet, I got to thank you for helping tell a beautiful story where I get sick and tired of people praising veterans in speeches and then not giving a damn about their quality of life.
No, absolutely. And me and my brother represent vets and organizations like Weed for Warriors. And when this opportunity came along, I didn't realize what was going to happen in terms of when I started preparing for the role, I went on my personal Instagram page, Waslaw, and started, "Hey, I'm an actor. I'm preparing for this role. Hashtag actor prepares," type of thing. I was like, "This is what I do."
Yeah.
And when I got closer to filming, and as my appearance without any makeup was changing, and my wife and children were hating me, and my eyebrows, my eyebrows, I cut them every week because they're crazy, and they did what I needed to do.
Sure.
And so when we started filming, I was really deep into that character, and I started getting messages on Instagram, "Hey, are you okay? I'm filming from a homeless encampment tent, and you know what's going on." And then I started getting text messages from people who I know, like maybe I hadn't seen them in 8 months or whatever, but they have my number. I know. And, "Are you okay? What the hell's going on?" And so then I was like, "Wow, I'm really blurring the lines here of reality," which is a very big thing these days with quote unquote reality TV.
No doubt.
So I created this Bill Morgan Instagram, Bill Morgan 1964 W Instagram page.
Okay.
To see what, and then one of the first messages that Bill Morgan got was, "Where can I donate?"
Wow.
And so I actually haven't opened that message yet because it just struck me that, wow, I might have an opportunity to actually raise money for vets somehow and take this a step further and make Bill Morgan, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just kind of evolving right now. And the response that I've gotten, like when I tell this is what the story's about, I get that response like you gave.
Wow. Mark, this is just a brilliant project. I can't wait to see it, support it. I'm going to follow that account as soon as I can.
I don't even know what I'm going to do with it, but it was fun during the filming because I shut down every other aspect of my life, and even my own phone, which I still don't know how I got through the day knowing my phone was completely shut off.
It's a weird feeling.
I had my iPhone. I have two different phones. I had the iPhone that became Bill Morgan's prop, that he found an iPhone And somebody, well, that's a whole other, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how he found it. But he got hold of iPhone, and he followed Ellen DeGeneres, Michael Rapaport, and Joe Grande.
Okay.
And, you know, he likes to dance and stuff like that. And so just it's doing little things like that to set up for future. Because as it was filming, he was in the tent. He was, you know, different things were going on. And then he's out living now in his treehouse.
Yeah.
And cleaned up a little, which is meant to say the beard got cut a little. He snuck into some country club. And, you know, you can see all that stuff on the IG. And then going on from there, we'll see what happens. And the bottom line is trying to raise awareness of all these problems that vets have, which is a crime that's not that we have to raise awareness
isn't
for it.
Yeah.
You know, but the homelessness coupled with the not being able to get cannabis as their medicine.
As their medicine that they need. Absolutely. My God. I'm so intrigued by the story, and I thank you for sharing that with us. I know that we're talking about film, and it seems like a lot of modern-day films are obsessed with telling, or maybe a better term is retelling, of origin stories.
Yes.
Could you give us a quick or a good origin story of how you and your brother started your practice?
Well, so it starts with my brother, who became an attorney in 1986. Mm-hmm. And he, as he says, he couldn't do math or science, so he became an attorney. And then, I have two older brothers. My oldest brother's a doctor, a geriatrician, mm-hmm. and then my brother here is an attorney. I was, you know, there was doctor, lawyer, Indian chief, you know, and I was the actor, artist, is, you know.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, Mark? What's going to happen? And so when I decided at some point I wanted to produce my own plays and films that I was writing, I needed to have money for that.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to use other people's money because then they wanted to have a say. So
sure.
How am I going to make money? Well, my brother's a doctor. I mean, I ain't going to school for 10 years. Other brother's an attorney. If he could do it, I could do it. And I found a law school where I was able to zip through in 2.5 years. And so I became an attorney 10 years after my brother in 1996.
Okay.
And I started practicing criminal defense right out of the gate, mm-hmm. for myself, my own practice. I passed the bar, and then 3 days later, I had my first client. And from there, I built my practice. Well, nobody would hire me.
Okay.
You know, that's why I didn't have a... The problem with, California, I can speak to. I mm-hmm. mean, most states have their system in the bar. Every state has their bar exam. Some states have 80, 95% pass rates for their bars exam.
Yeah.
California, you know, like the year I passed, it was like, you know, 30%.
Yeah, it's kind of like Delaware, like where we're from. They have a ridiculous standard, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, and I took it 3 times. Okay. And so when you're waiting for the results, it's like 3 months. And you go to a job, they can't hire you. You're not an attorney yet. Uh-huh. And then, well, we need a clerk, but if you become an attorney in 3 months, we don't need an attorney. We need a clerk. You're just going to leave, so we're not going to hire you. It's kind of catch 22.
Sure.
And so I found myself in that situation 3 days after raising my hand and swearing in, and I went back to the coffee shop where I'd studied for 3 months the last time I studied. And the barista, who, you know, I knew him all. I studied at his coffee shop for 3 months. You get to know everybody. So, are you an attorney yet? And I said, yeah, I just became one. Well, my cousin got a DUI last night. Can you help? I said, yeah. And I got my coffee, and I'm walking out, like, just shaking. Called my brother. I think I just got a client. I don't know what the fuck to do. Oh, it's okay. I am the shut the fuck up guy. I'm assuming fuck's okay.
Oh, I know. I know, brother. Like I said, I'm a big fan. Big fan. We're going to get into that.
So my brother says, what is it? I tell him it's a DUI. And I want to do criminal defense. Call Fritchie, who was a criminal defense attorney for 30-some-odd years, good friend of my brother's, and a real shy, quiet guy. Great, great attorney. Mm-hmm. Called him up. I said, hey, I got this DUI. What do I do? How much do I charge? Yeah. It's really the first question I asked. What do I charge? I'm going to stop paying loans back.
Yeah, really.
What do I do here? And he goes, well, I charge this is 1996. I charge $750, representation arraignment through the pretrial. Mm-hmm. If they want to go to trial, it's going to be more. And I said, okay. And it didn't say, it didn't sound enough because he'd been practicing 30 years. So I just called around to attorneys in the phone book, and I was finding charges from like a thousand to 3,000 to five, and you know, with his experience, man, he shouldn't be charging $750. So I get the phone call from the client, who says, "My cousin called me, but told me to call you, but I'm going to tell you right now, she told me everything. Just tell me, is it true? You just passed the bar. You don't have a job. You don't work for anybody. You work for yourself. And you've never been to court." And I said, yes, it's all true. And I've never been to court. Nobody hired me. But I am an attorney, and I can go to court.
And you're honest.
Maybe to a fault. But I explained to him that in this scenario here, if he chooses to retain my services, he will be retaining two attorneys for the price of one. And he'll be getting a second attorney who's got 30 years of experience, usually charges $5,000, only going to charge $1,500, and I'm going to learn everything I need to learn, and you'll get two attorneys. And so a day or two later, I had $1,500 cash in my hand, and I went to Fritchie, and I said, hey, okay, we have a client. And I gave him $750. And he said, well, wait a minute. I told you that we'd split it. I don't want all the money. And I go, that's half. And he said, well, what happened? How'd you do that? I go, well, I think you undervalue yourself. I called around. You know, I told him how much this. He was happy to do it. And that's when I learned in business there are people who can be brilliant at what they're doing. But when it comes to the business side of it, like he just couldn't ask people for money or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But that's how I built my practice, hanging out, barfly, anywhere, coffee shops, libraries, grocery store, not hanging out, but just anywhere I was at, I keep an ear open, got problems, I do that, got car accident, I do that, need a contract, I do that, wills, I do that. I did everything because what I would do is go find, through my brother's network, an attorney who 20, 30 years practicing, and then I would always make, they would get more money from their split with me than they would getting their own clients, because I would always get more money. They would just charge this, and I would say, I can get more than that. I don't know. It's, you're worth more than that. You get the worth. And so that's how I built my practice up until 2015. I need to take a sip of this.
Absolutely. Then we move into getting cannabis centric, I guess, around that time for you.
What's that?
Around 2015.
Oh yeah, so right. So the fateful day of January 22nd, 2015, when my nephew, my brother's son, known as Jay Cures, of West Coast Cure in California,
okay,
who, as an aside here, when he was 13. And my brother was going through a nasty divorce, four kids, and he was the oldest at 13. And, you know, they got the counselors and psychiatrists and all that shit going on.
Sure thing.
And they want to give him pills and garbage and all that. And my brother said, no way. Well, come in the backyard. Take a puff of this. You know, see how that makes you feel. If you're going to put anything in your system, it's going to be that. And he did. You know, we didn't know the Pandora's box that was ultimately. Yeah. That's another show.
Okay.
You should remind me.
Love to do that.
Because that kid, Jay Cures, my nephew, love him. He's the reason I sit here today. He's the reason Pop Brothers at Law exist, because on January 22nd, 2015, he came into our office and said, Dad, Unc, my friends need attorneys to interview about Prop 64 in California, the adult use that's coming.
Yeah.
And they can't find any attorneys who will talk and smoke at the same time.
Right.
And I told them my dad and my uncle will do it. My brother goes, what? I said, where do we go?
There we go.
Where? And so
it's a meeting I want to take.
Yes. And my brother said, oh, what are you talking about? the bar, the state bar. We're going to be smoking. And he was, you know, he's more conservative, older. You know? And I said, look, we're in California. We have our physician's recommendation. We're going to a private place. We're not breaking any laws. It's a private studio. You know, what's the problem? Yeah, throughout 10 or 15 minutes, okay, let's do it. And it was, okay, when is this? Jarrett, that's his name, my nephew. And in true Jarrett form, we got to go right now. Got to go. Up in Hollywood, we got to go. It's Be Real TV Studios. I said, oh, I have Be Real, Cypress Hill. I didn't know he's on TV. What, you know,
yeah.
Channel 4. I didn't know it was an internet.
Connecting,
you know, that's
it, yeah.
It, right? So, old dude. You know, so he goes, it's an internet, you know, sorry. So we pop up to the studio in Hollywood, wherever it was, and we go on this talk show, and we joints, dabs, and bongs, and smoking, questions, and Adam Hill, the host, was just, as he said, I'm a stoner. I drive around with stuff. What are the cops? What do I do? You know, what do we do? We're scared. We don't. And so this was actually before we created the script itself.
Yes. Okay.
Right? So because before that, I shut the fuck up. I never consent to searches. I invoke the fifth.
Yeah.
I mean, those basic things that I learned from my mentors and stuff like that. So when we were answering and fielding all these questions and they were coming in, it was just a great experience.
Sure.
Opened our eyes to social media.
Right.
And what's going on the internet and how you can actually tap in and reach people. You know, I had Facebook. I had Facebook since its inception.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 7 or 8 years to get 5,000 friends, right?
Okay.
And that's all they allow you on the Facebook for your personal page. But once we finished that show that day, that night, my brother and my nephew again, he had told us 3 years before that, or whenever Instagram started.
Yeah.
You guys got to get on Instagram. You guys got to
get
on Instagram, teach people this. And I looked at it, and I was like, oh, there's, you know, there's naked chicks and pot all over the place. That's all there was in the very beginning of Instagram. That's really what you saw. I'm like, I ain't going on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so now it's like 2-3 years later, and he had some cases, that felonies and stuff like that, that ultimately we got dismissed because he did everything he said. You got to get on Instagram and teach people what you taught me. And at Be Real TV Studios, my brother gets on Instagram. And he knows nothing about social media.
Okay.
And creates the Pot Brothers at Law Instagram page by putting in pot space, brothers space. That space, for all of you who don't know, creates an underscore.
Yes.
Which is annoying because now for 6 years, our Instagram, pot_brothers_@_law.
Yes.
That's the Instagram page.
That's it.
The other one that goes straight through has become our backup page. But my brother created that page. My nephew says, go take pictures with Be Real, post it up. And, you know, that was fine and dandy. And then now what? And so I started looking at what Instagram was or wasn't. Or what. I went to the computer and I was like, and you can't do anything, right, on the computer really, which was annoying. Another thing on my phone now. And so I, you know, I'm like, what are we going to do? It was 15-second videos back then.
Yeah.
And we came up with 15-second tips of the day on what you're going to do when the cops pull you over.
Right.
Geared towards cannabis patients in California, because we're cannabis attorneys in California. We live in California, attorneys. And, you know, we, beyond California law, we can't advise anything with regards to other states' specific laws or anything like that. And so, but what it turned into as we started seeing on Instagram an immediate just explosion of, took me 5,000 friends on Facebook, 7 years.
Yeah.
2 or 3 weeks. I don't know what, we had 5,000 followers on Instagram.
It's incredible.
And as we were sharing Invoke the Fifth, Shut the Fuck Up, all those things, questions were coming at us. And what do I do if the cop says this? What if this happens? And that, this, and the other thing. And rather than say, well, just shut the fuck up, you can invoke the fifth.
Yeah.
You know, which is, I guess that's the easy way out.
Yeah, that covers the bases.
We actually had to think and talk to each other about, well, what we want to give everyone the simplest way to respond to officers. in a polite way while maintaining all of your rights, remedies, and defenses under the Constitution of the United States. And, as we have found, what we say, absent invoke the Fifth, works in other countries.
Wow.
Shutting the fuck up and all that. And so, as we were going back and forth, I'm not discussing my day. Just bottom line, easiest answer to any question. Any question. Why did you pull me over is there in the beginning, because the cops have 8 to 9 minutes to write you a ticket or establish other independent probable cause. That clock starts ticking when the stop is established.
Okay.
Why did you pull me over? I'm not discussing my day. And then, am I being detained or am I free to go? Now you're giving the cop the opportunity to let you go. The opportunity to sit back and think, this person knows their rights. I'm looking in the car. I don't see anything. You know what? The next 10 people are going to rat on themselves and give me everything I want.
Yeah.
So, goodbye. Be on your way. Or they detain you. Then you have to say, I invoke the Fifth because the Supreme Court says so. And then no matter what they say or do, you shut the fuck up from handcuff to whenever you get out.
Mark, that your script is brilliant. What drew me to your account to begin with was I just thought it was so damn thoughtful. And I just thought there was such good intention behind it. And I wanted to ask you specifically about that one line in the script, mm-hmm. because to me, thanks to these things, people think they're a curse. They can be a great blessing for a lot of people, mm-hmm. because unfortunately, we've seen law enforcement act with absolute reckless abandon in so many of these stops. So I just thought that was the most brilliant part of that script. How do they use, you teach people, I'm not discussing my day. What are they going for there? What are they wheedling out of people? Because I just thought that was so brilliant. I'm going to shut that down right now. I'm not discussing my day. Why is that so important for us to know?
Because, like I was just saying, it's the perfect response to anything the cop says. Like, you know, play the game. You know,
yeah.
Be the cop. Be the cop. Ask me a question.
Yeah, that's a brilliant
thing. Go ahead.
Having a bad day today?
I'm not discussing my day.
Yeah. Man, I don't know where to go.
The cop will say, you know, where are you going? How fast? Why are you going so fast? Sure. Where have you been? You know, what's that smell?
Yeah.
You know, why are your eyes red? Are you tired? When's the last time you actually slept? But first of all, it's none of their business.
Yes.
None of it. We are in America still, think.
I hope.
Some form of it.
Some form.
And you have the right. So the Miranda warnings, that's what everyone associates the Fifth Amendment with, right?
Yes.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you can, it's blah, 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 blah. And that's all it is to me, blah, 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 blah. Because I don't want people to care about the Miranda right. It is your right.
Yes.
It's under the Miranda case that came down whenever it came down. But simply put, it is just your constitutional Fifth Amendment right to shut the fuck up. Because people get, hey, he didn't read me my rights. So, were you in a custodial interrogation position? They don't have to read you your rights until they're doing a custodial interrogation. When that cop walks up to you or walks up to your car and says whatever he says, and you say whatever you say, there's no protection there.
Yeah.
I can't get that dismissed. He doesn't owe you anything and give you any warning because he wasn't interrogating you. You were not in a custodial interrogation situation. So, you know, he wants you to say, that's why you got right to it. Why'd you pull me over? And get right to it so you don't get caught in that trap where later, that's what we get all the time. Hey, you know, but he didn't read me my Miranda rights. I go, well, let me see what happened. Oh, well, he didn't have to. Just like you didn't have to talk. You wake up with and go to sleep with your Fifth Amendment right to shut the fuck up. Forget Miranda.
I love it. Mark, my God, I can't thank you so much for your time and generosity.
It's my pleasure.
Sitting down with me. If we want to find you, you're practicing in California. We find Pot Brothers. It's pot_brothers_at_law on Instagram.
Correct.
And how people get in touch with you and your brother if they need your services.
And that's the same on TikTok. And we've got it 855-WASS-LAW. That's WASSLAW. Toll-free line. And while we practice and take our own cases only in California, through our social media reach, we have created a worldwide attorney referral network system.
So cheers.
We can quite possibly refer you to a good, honest, ethical attorney that we vetted out all across the globe.
Excellent. Mark Wasserman's been my guest on Infused, one half of the Pot Brothers at Law. Mark, I can't wait for the film to come out. Again,
thank you
for dedicating yourself the way you did to this role, because it touched me just hearing about it, and I'm so grateful for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
I'm Larry Mishkin, and I'd like to invite you to join Rob Hunt and me on our weekly podcast, The Deadhead Cannabis Show. Each week, we explore the latest cannabis and jam band news and reminisce with other deadheads and jam band lovers about the great musical acts that we've seen and heard. Check out a new episode every Monday.